It's really easy to have concerns raised over a particular year and the pay outcomes that you might be seeing. But sometimes when you're able to take a longer term time frame, you can see that they may balance out. And so, you know, a low payout in one cycle might be getting offset by some higher payouts in another cycle, but giving you that multi-year perspective really helps you determine how the program is working holistically.
Welcome to the Executive Compensation Podcast. On this show, we discuss all aspects of executive compensation. Whether you're a compensation committee member, a seasoned compensation professional, or just curious to learn more about executive compensation, then this show is the answer. Each episode brings you a focused and actionable interview on specific topics of executive compensation. This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com.
Welcome to the Executive Compensation Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Harvey. And on this episode, I'm joined by Daniel Rada and Tina Murphy. Daniel is a partner working out of Atlanta, and Tina is a principal working out of Detroit. Daniel, Tina, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ryan. Great to be with you.
Thanks, Ryan. It's good to be here for my first time.
Yeah. So today, I think our listeners are going to find the topic pretty interesting, particularly as we kick off 2025. Nearly every compensation committee establishes a calendar of standard agenda items, which provide the structure for the meetings over the course of the year. And the calendar typically aligns with the scope of duties outlined in the committee charter. It includes activities such as pay benchmarking, preparation for proxy disclosures. And so today we're going to be discussing five valuable agenda topics, which may not be on every compensation committee's calendar, but probably should be. So Daniel, I wanted to start with you and just if you could maybe just give us an overview of what are those five topics that you think committee members or comp committees in general should be including in their 2025 agendas.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. This is a great time of year to really be thinking as you're pulling the calendar together, are there things that haven't been on the agenda in the past that should be? And as T and I were preparing for our time together today, there are really five things that we thought were important to raise. The first is really assessing the outcomes of your pay program through analyses of realizable pay and holding power. Frequently, this time of year, we're doing a lot of assessments on target pay, but it's also critical to look at pay outcomes to see if those are aligned with performance and also to see the impact of financial and market performance on the holding power of your outstanding awards. The second thing that we wanted to talk about is just getting ready for say on pay. It's important as you go into your pay decisions to assess whether or not you're at risk of a negative vote recommendation from the proxy advisors. And if so, making sure that you're prepared for that and potential shareholder outreach as you head into your shareholder meeting. The third thing that we wanted to talk about was really evaluating your share plan and assessing the management of your share plan through your equity usage, the dilution, your run rate, and the overall spend from your equity plans. Now, the fourth thing that we had on our list was to really look at the committee charter and the responsibilities that are a part of that. We've certainly seen over the past few years a lot of expansion for the compensation committee. And so we think it's important to take a look and see what all you're including in that charter and are there things that should be added or taken away from it even. And then the last thing that we wanted to talk about was really to take a look at your programs holistically and do more of what we would call an audit of your programs to take a comprehensive look. What are the things that maybe you haven't looked at in detail as a committee over the past couple of years and make sure you're remembering all of those elements of the compensation program that may not come up on a regular basis?
Yeah, that sounds like a great list and really definitely five areas that are valuable and important for committees to consider. So why don't we start right at the top, Tina, with that first item, which is the realizable pay and holding power. Maybe describe for us, why is this an important topic that committees should be thinking about? And then how should they go about with that type of an analysis?
Sure, Ryan. So both of these analyses have really gained traction among compensation committees in recent years. So let's start with the realizable pay analysis. One of the most effective ways to evaluate executive comp is by comparing realizable pay to target pay. So target pay represents the intended compensation package set by the committee, assuming goals are met at target levels, while realizable pay, on the other hand, reflects the actual outcomes of that pay structure, including changes in stock price and incentive payouts based on performance. A realizable pay analysis can help the committee in a few specific ways. First off, it's evaluating pay for performance alignment. By comparing realizable pay to target pay, the committee can validate whether the company's compensation program is functioning as intended. For instance, overperformance with low realizable pay could discourage executives, signaling the need to adjust equity structures or incentive design. On the other hand, underperformance with high realizable pay can raise red flags about plan mechanics such as goal setting process and methodology. It also helps when responding to shareholder feedback. When shareholders or proxy advisors express concerns about perceived overpayment or lack of alignment with performance, realizable versus target pay analysis can provide a compelling data-driven response. And then lastly, it helps with improving incentive plan design. By understanding how actual outcomes deviate from targets, committees can fine-tune performance metrics, payout ranges, or vesting structures to ensure alignment with company goals. We typically present a realizable versus target pay analysis in an easy-to-interpret visual format, including a bar chart comparing target pay to realizable pay over a three-year period, alongside performance metrics like total shareholder return. Oftentimes, it's helpful to highlight a few key items on the exhibit, like bonus payouts for each year, estimated PSU payouts, and stock price on the day the equity is granted. Now, alternatively, a holding power analysis addresses a complementary but distinct issue, long-term alignment and retention. So this analysis assesses the value of unvested equity holdings of an executive, also called holding power. So holding power is the glue that retains executives, as equity awards are forfeited upon resignation. So the larger the value of unvested equity, the greater the loss to the executive upon resignation, and the greater the cost to a competitor to poach the executive away. So holding power analysis is a measure of whether executives have sufficient skin in the game, as we call it, to stay with the company and stay motivated and aligned with shareholder interests over the long term. Holding power analyses are particularly helpful for retention during strategic events. So when a company is undergoing a significant transformation, such as a merger, an acquisition, or leadership transition, holding power analyses help the committee understand whether executives are adequately incentivized to stay through the change and maintain focus on shareholder value, or if it will be easy to just walk away. The output of a holding power analysis usually includes a stacked area line chart composed of each element of unvested equity. We typically break this down by award and year, so distinctly showing the unvested portion of each award. The y-axis has the total value of unvested equity, while the x-axis has the company's stock price. This shows how the value of unvested equity changes based on the stock price. So at the end of the day, realizable pay and holding power analyses work hand in hand to provide a full picture of executive alignment and retention. Realizable pay focuses on whether the current design rewards actual performance, while holding power assesses the sustainability of these incentives over the long term. Both analyses, when presented effectively, really empower boards to make informed decisions about whether pay designs are achieving strategic goals or whether adjustments are needed.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, both of these types of analyses are, in my opinion, really critical for a compensation committee if they're fulfilling their duties. If you were to review the vast majority of comp philosophy statements out there in the proxy, they're all going to say they're trying to align pay and performance. Alignment of pay and performance is generally one of the top objectives. And they're all going to talk about retention of key talent. And if you're not, as a committee, looking at those two things, how are we doing on alignment? And do we feel like we have appropriate level of retention in our plans? If you're not looking at those things annually, it's kind of hard to really say that those are important philosophies. So agree, it's important. And also, I think these are nice items. They're not necessarily tied to the calendar as tightly as some of the other things like benchmarking and proxy prep and those kinds of things. So they fit nicely into some of the slower parts of the calendar, maybe Q2 or Q3, where you may not have as many urgent items that you have to address as a committee. it's a great time to think about some of these more strategic things like alignment and retention.
Yeah, I agree, Ryan. Sometimes, or oftentimes, we do these in the summer months when you said like the agenda is not as full. So it's a good time to slip those items in.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to add to that is I found that there's a lot of value in looking at these over a multi-year basis, that it's really easy to have concerns raised over a particular year and the pay outcomes that you might be seeing. But sometimes when you're able to take a longer term time frame, you can see that they may balance out. And so, you know, a low payout in one cycle might be getting offset by some higher payouts in another cycle, but giving you that multi-year perspective really helps you determine how the program is working holistically.
Why don't we move to that the second item on your list, Daniel, which was say on pay. So I would guess every committee is addressing proxy preparation. I mean, that's something you have to do if you're a publicly traded company, but they may not all be strategically thinking about say on pay and how do you prepare for the best outcome. So what are some things that you would suggest committees consider in that category?
Yeah, well, Ryan, you know, one of the worst outcomes for a compensation committee is to get an against recommendation from ISS or Glass Lewis that you didn't expect to get. And the proxy advisors can certainly pull a surprise from time to time, but there's a lot that you can do to really assess your risk going into the season and know how concerned you need to be about what their recommendation might come out as. I think one of the most important things that you can do is really look at modeling of what the quantitative tests are going to come out in terms of a low or a medium or a high concern from ISS. We know that quantitative test goes a long way towards driving whether or not they're going to be recommend for or against your say on pay. And there's a lot that can be done to really anticipate what the likely outcome of that is. So certainly the relative degree of alignment test that they look at, that's a three-year TSR against a three-year CO pay assessment. Really, you can know where your three-year TSR stacks up, and you can have a pretty good idea of how your pay is going to stack up over that time period. So you can assess the likelihood that you might trigger a medium or a high concern. And really the same is true for the other two quantitative tests that they use in their analysis to generate their initial concern level and their pay for performance assessment. Glass Lewis, they also have their quantitative test that impacts their recommendations. It is a little harder to do the modeling around just because they look at compensation across all named executive officers, and they're also using financial metrics in addition to TSR. But you can still take a look at your historical results. There's modeling that can be done around pay levels and performance to have a sense of the likely outcome on that. And really, when you get the expected outcomes on the quantitative test, that helps you as you also think through the more qualitative elements of your program. And is there anything or actions that you've taken over the past year that might put you more at risk? And certainly, if you've made special off-cycle awards, or if you've used unusual discretion with your incentive plans, or had maybe a more profile executive departure, those are things that are, we've certainly seen trip up say on pay votes in the past. And so you want to be cognizant of those. And really all of that helps paint a picture for what is some of the key messaging that you need to drive within your CD&A disclosure. I think we've seen over time, some companies have been more hesitant to hit on some of the potential areas of concern directly, and they might try to bury some special actions that they've taken or not be as clear in their disclosure around some of those things. But I've seen over time, it's much better to hit those head on. If there's areas that you know might generate concern, go ahead and put forth your rationale for why you took those actions and really defend the rationale and why they were in the shareholder's best interest. But I think being able to look and anticipate the degree of risk that you may have from a say on pay perspective can certainly help shape your disclosure. And also, if you think you have a risk of getting an against recommendation from ISS or Glass Lewis, we'd also recommend preparing for what a shareholder outreach may look like after those recommendations come out. I think there's a lot that can be done to reach out to your shareholders to say, look, we recognize what ISS or Glass Lewis has had to say. We'd like for you to consider these other things. Are you willing to have a conversation? And you may be able to move some of those shareholders that might have been in against or might have just followed ISS and Glass Lewis after a conversation, may be more willing to vote and vote in favor of your say on pay. And if you can save that result, if you can move what could have been a 68% or a 78% up above 80%, it's a much better outcome. And it saves you from a lot of the expectations around what you need to do to respond to a low say on pay vote in the following year.
Yeah, you know, being proactive in this area is very important, like you said. And on that shareholder outreach, I mean, I think we've seen more and more over the last few years, companies building in that outreach really almost as a year-round cycle, not just right around the time of the proxy. You're more than likely, your IR group, your investor relations group is probably having conversations already year-round. So building in a compensation element to that can be very helpful. So that you're already dialoguing with your investors on pay, and it's not something new when you've got maybe particular issues you've got to address. And I think we've seen that as we've looked at the data just in this past year around say on pay, we've seen that more and more companies passing say on pay, the very, very small fraction of companies fail. And that's gone down even from where it was a few years ago. Fewer companies getting ISS against recommendations. But again, I think all of that speaks to the things you're talking about, being proactive in how you disclose in a proxy and how you reach out to investors.
Yeah, and just to add to that, when a company doesn't do well on, say, on pay, I think the top priority among proxy advisors is really a thorough presentation of shareholder engagement, like you mentioned, Ryan, particularly efforts made to solicit feedback from the last annual meeting and then any changes to the compensation program made as a result of this feedback. And then we've even put together a sample of excellent proxy disclosures that clearly outline that what we heard and actions we took, which can serve as a helpful guide for other companies, other clients going through similar situations.
Yep. Let's hit number three on our list, which gets into share reservations for incentive plans. Of course, every public company needs to have a share plan. They need to have shares adequately reserved within that plan. But there's really a whole process around that, not just getting those shares approved and in the plan when needed, but a whole process around managing that and making sure that you've got adequate levels of shares and you're not exceeding dilution or run rate or those kinds of things. So Tina, walk us through, you know, what should committees be thinking about regarding shares and what's the process that they need to be building into their calendars?
So many of our clients conduct equity usage analyses on an annual basis, as this study is a critical tool for compensation committees to ensure the effective and responsible use of equity as part of the company's incentive programs. It really provides the committee with insights into how the company is using equity to attract, retain, and incentivize that talent, while also balancing shareholder interests and preserving equity for future needs. As Ryan mentioned, it can also inform decisions about when to approach shareholders to request approval for additional shares. So to break it down a little, there are typically five key metrics that are evaluated during an equity usage analysis. Number one is dilution. This metric looks at the total outstanding equity awards and shares available for issuance as a percentage of total shares outstanding. It's often a critical concern for shareholders who want assurance that equity grants are not excessively diluting their ownership. Then number two is run rate, or often called burn rate. This measures the number of shares granted in a year, expressed as a percentage of total shares outstanding. High run rates may indicate excessive equity usage, which can be flagged by both proxy advisors and shareholders. Then number three, you have LTI spend, which is the dollar value of equity awards granted annually throughout the entire organization. Four is the sharing ratio, which takes that LTI spend I just mentioned and expresses it as a percentage of market cap to normalize for company size. Comparing LTI spend and sharing ratio to peers and industry norms can really help committees understand whether the company is using their equity efficiently. And then last is equity pool sustainability. So this projects how long the company's current equity pool will last at current usage rates, factoring in potential growth in headcount or equity awards. And this can help advise the committee as to when the company may have to request more shares from shareholders. So an equity usage analysis can help the committee in a few main ways. First off, as I mentioned, it balances talent strategy and shareholder interests. As we all know, equity is an extremely valuable tool for attracting and retaining that top talent, but excessive usage can dilute shareholders. On the other hand, underutilizing the equity can lead to attraction and retention concerns throughout the organization. So this study helps to ensure that the company is striking the right balance. And then second, in these studies, we always look at the client's share usage as well as share usage at all peer companies. So this can highlight whether the company is over or underutilizing equity relative to market norms. For example, if our client sees that they're granting less equity as compared to peers, we can do a deeper dive into where that's stemming from. Are target grant values below peers' target grant values? Are they granting equity to fewer people in the organization? Or maybe it's a combination of both. And then lastly, it aids in supporting shareholder proposals. So if the company needs to request additional shares, which Meridian can help with as well, this study provides data to demonstrate that prior equity usage was responsible and aligns with best practices. So at the end of the day, an equity usage study provides essential insights into the sustainability and effectiveness of the company's equity programs. And when conducted regularly, it becomes a proactive tool for ensuring long-term alignment between executives, the company, and the shareholders.
Great thoughts. So you kind of listed a number of things there. And I guess maybe to start with, most, in my experience, most companies try to have 3 to 4, maybe 5 years of grants available within their plan. So they're going back to shareholders every, let's say, 3 to 5 years. The things you just listed, things like dilution run rate, looking at LTI spend, but then you also talked a little bit about doing some kind of equity benchmarking against run rates of peers. Are some of those things, would you guys say, should be done every year? Are some of those things that should be done maybe more periodically every couple of years? Or do you feel like all of that is something that most committees should be looking at on an annual basis?
I prefer to see it on an annual basis, especially because it can often tell a story of what's happening at a company. If there's some sort of strategic event, maybe more equity was granted to kind of retain some individuals. So I like to see it on a full every year, so you can see that full 5-year, 3-year look. But maybe, Daniel, you feel differently.
I think it can depend somewhat on company circumstances. I think it is important each year to assess your own programs in terms of how much equity have you been using, how much is left in your plan. I think sometimes the comparison to peers, maybe depending on your industry, your peer group, and what the data has shown historically, maybe something that could be looked at on a more periodic basis as opposed to annually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't we move to number 4? So number 4 gets into the issue of committee kind of purview, scope of the committee. And I think this has been something that's gotten a fair amount of attention in the last few years, as I think a lot of committees have considered, what is their scope? Is it just compensation? Should they be considering other elements of human capital management as part of their committee scope and purview? Obviously, all of those things end up getting documented and really captured within the committee charter, which is something that I think needs to be reviewed and assessed on a regular basis. So, Daniel, how would you suggest companies take a look at their charter, and what's the process around building that into the agenda?
I do think it is important for the committee to take a look at its charter on an annual basis to say, are we doing all of the things that we have in our charter? Are we accomplishing that? Is there anything that needs to be revised from that standpoint? And then beyond that sort of annual check of the charter, I think periodically taking a look across your peers and your industry, what are the types of things that are in the charters from others, and taking a deeper dive on that is a worthwhile exercise, just to really even get ideas of what other committees are focused on and have a discussion about whether or not that should be considered as part of your agenda as well. I think we have, to your point, Ryan, we've seen a lot over the past few years in terms of the committee name changing and expansion beyond just compensation into some of these more human capital topics. And I think that's really been a reflection of or recognition of how important the people are to the organization and the employees of the organization to driving results for shareholders, and recognition of the board level as that is a critical area of risk and an area for the board to provide some oversight as part of their responsibilities and fiduciary responsibility to shareholders. So I think we've seen committees take more focus on things like culture, engagement surveys, and what are the results of that, things around inclusion and diversity, things around pay equity, talent development, certainly succession planning, what kind of training and development programs you have. These are all things that we're seeing show up more and more on the committee agenda, as they really are focused on what are we doing to make sure that we're maintaining the talent that we need to drive the organization forward and create shareholder value. I think where we've seen sometimes it is a challenge for our clients is to figure out exactly how to integrate that on the calendar throughout the year. And that is why, as you're pulling together your annual calendar, it can be a useful time to sit back and say, okay, what meetings maybe have more or less time available for us to add in some of these other topics, which are often not as time dependent as other things that are on the committee's agenda. So you can look for those meetings where maybe you have a little more room. We've also certainly had a number of clients that have added a meeting to the committee's calendar through the course of the year just to provide more time to spend on some of these topics and really trying to stage things throughout the course of the year so that you can hit on some of these things that are important for the board to have some insight into as they seek to work with management and make sure the company is driving forward.
Yeah, and I know with, you know, the clients I work with, they all seem to at least once a year take a look at their charter, but it seems like the vast majority of the time it's a very, very quick conversation. It's legal saying, hey, we're going to edit this word or that word, and it very quickly gets approved and moved on, which in most years that may be appropriate. But I guess I would say if you haven't, as a committee, really done a deeper dive in a number of years, and really read through it as individual committee members to say, hey, does this truly really reflect what we want to be doing as a committee? It's probably something that deserves some attention. Again, not that level of depth maybe every year, but periodically it does.
Yeah, as you both alluded to, I think committees need to approach it with the mindset that assessing the committee charter is more than just a compliance exercise, right? It's an opportunity to strengthen governance, clarify responsibilities, and just kind of adapt to the changing landscape of executive compensation and corporate governance.
So let's close out with number five, which was holistic program audit. That sounds pretty big and interesting. Tina, why don't you walk us through what you mean by that?
Sure, Ryan. And for lack of a better name, a holistic program audit starts by looking at each facet of executive compensation and all governance-related items to check when the last analysis or assessment was completed. So this will be called the audit summary matrix, which is a table that shows all major analyses and the date of last completion. So if we discover that an analysis has not been completed in the last, let's say, 2 to 3 years, we mark that as an area that requires an update. This is a really good way to keep track of completed assessments and can provide a structured and proactive way to manage the entire exec comp program, ensuring no critical elements are overlooked and that the program evolves in step with the company strategy and market practices. We check for a myriad of analyses, including but not limited to compensation philosophy, realizable pay, holding power, compensation benchmarking for both executives and directors, equity usage, peer group review, short and long-term incentive design. I'm going to keep going here. Severance and CIC protections, retirement age and treatment of equity, perquisites, clawback policy, and stock ownership guidelines, just to name a few. For analyses that are outdated, updated reports are delivered, often including a summary of how the company's current program compares to peers and market-leading practice. If appropriate, we'll also provide specific action steps to address the gaps, improve alignment, or update program elements based on our findings. And ultimately, a holistic program audit provides compensation committees with a clear roadmap to ensure the executive comp program is competitive, aligned with strategic goals, and reflective of current best practices. By, again, proactively addressing these gaps, committees can maintain robust governance and enhance the shareholder confidence.
Yeah, and one thing as you're walking through that just made me think about the current state we're in. You know, we're recording this podcast at the end of 2024 as we're looking into 2025. Of course, we can speculate as to exactly where the regulatory world's going to go, but I think everybody at this point is under the assumption that we're going to see a significant amount of deregulation in the coming year and years. And so this type of an audit seems like it would lend itself very much to some of the changes that we're likely to see in the coming year around looking at your programs and assessing, are some of these things driven purely by regulatory reasons and trying to comply with regulatory reasons, or maybe some of those things that you can alter or change, how much of it is aligned to philosophy and strategic direction. So just given the amount of change I think we're likely to see in the coming year or years, could be a very opportune time to do this type of analysis.
Yeah, I think I've also seen clients where it can be very easy for things like your severance plan or your stock ownership guidelines to really not get a whole lot of attention for a while. And you look back and say, it's really been 3 or 4 years since we've taken a deep dive to say, are these things functioning the way that we want them? And are we being competitive with what's in the marketplace? So the audit is really a valuable tool for just making sure that we are being comprehensive in the things that we're looking at. And there's plenty of things that don't need to be looked at on an annual basis, but you do want to make sure that you're at least assessing them every few years.
This has been a good list. We only hit 5 items. I'm sure there's probably another 5 to 10 we could talk about, which are other important things committees could be considering, but a great kind of top 5 list to consider for 2025. Daniel, Tina, very interesting discussion. And thanks again for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, Ryan. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Executive Compensation Podcast. You can see more about this episode along with additional executive compensation insights at meridiancp.com. That's Meridian, the letter C, and the letter P.com. This episode is brought to you by Meridian Compensation Partners. Meridian works with compensation committees to ensure the most effective processes are in place to go beyond mere compliance with governance requirements and create healthy, dynamic relationships between the board, management, and its advisors. Meridian helps boards use compensation to attract and retain critical talent and to make informed business decisions that will link pay and performance, drive business results, increase shareholder value, and mitigate potential risks. Learn more at meridiancp.com.